Today's program is brought to you by Copper and Kings, pure copper pot-distilled American brandy, aged in Kentucky bourbon barrels. For more information, visit copperandkings.com.
Hi, this is Celia Cutcher, host of Animal Instinct, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
All right, you are listening to Heritage Radio, and this show, The Speakeasy, is produced by Heritage Radio Network, a nonprofit, member-supported radio station devoted to all things food and drinks. Help keep HRN alive by becoming a member today. Go to heritageradionetwork.org and click on the beating heart to donate. Do it now.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll load. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some.
All right, you're listening to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte.
I'm Souther Teague.
And we are here today with a really, really amazing bartender friend of ours. And I can't believe that we haven't had you on the show before. This is really incredible to have you here today. Eben Freeman, welcome to the show. First of all, I love that your last name is Freeman. You're totally free, man. So Eben is the director of bar development at Everco and Genuine Liquorette, and it's really great to have you on the show today. Thanks so much for being here.
Well, thank you. I'm kind of hesitant to speak after that radio voice. I kind of feel like I'm squeaky like this after
all you got to do is just have a beer and let it rip. So thanks again for coming on the show today.
My pleasure, really. Thank you, guys.
So we met a long time ago. It's great to have you. You've been all over the city and all over the planet, kicking ass and taking names, and really, like, you're one of the people I think about the most when I think about, like, just straight up, like, classic bartender people. You know, you've had a rich history in the bar world, and most recently you're at Genuine Liquorette, where you've basically
turned us all up on our heads.
Turned us up, literally everything on its head, because one of the main things that you do there that sets it apart from other bar programs is that you've got the based on like a highball style of mixing drinks. You're taking airplane bottles, as we call them often, like 50 milliliter bottles of booze. And
you're going full South Carolina style.
Yeah, it's based on the bulldog, you know, the Mexican bulldog, you know, where you've got like a frozen margarita. We've all, right? Everyone, we've had them before, like, yeah. Where you take a bottle of Corona, and you dunk it upside down into a frozen margarita, and then you just, like, get sunburnt. That's basically what happens, right? That's the end result, always.
Fall
right?
asleep on the beach, get burned. Yeah.
It doesn't take much for me to get, and I would imagine Souther to get sunburned. But yeah, that definitely is an agitating cocktail for that to happen.
So you took the bulldog as an inspiration, and now you take airline bottles and flip them up into highball style cocktails and serve them just like that. The bottle is the garnish. They're adorable.
Exactly. I mean, we put garnishes on there as well, but, you know, I think the beauty of this idea is that it's so simple. You know, I've done ideas in the past with molecular gastronomy and all that, where people are impressed but didn't have the sense that I could do this. And I think the best thing about this is people saying, why didn't I think of this first? And some people are just like, is that all there is? You're tempted as an egoist to say, you know, what do you mean is that all there is? But I realized that's really the power in it, is people were like, why didn't I think of this before? Why didn't I do this on an airplane, you know? And the fact that they see it as so accessible is much more powerful than something that's so staggering in its complexity that they feel like they could never do it.
Right. So it's really cool. I mean, like, you got your start in the industry working at a wine store.
Yep.
Correct? And like, while you were in college, like, what like most of us, like going
fill in,
to college.
Fill in a few gaps for us. So what happened in between the wine store and like most of us, genuine liquorette?
Yeah, we don't really, most of us, we don't use our degrees.
That is a big gap because I am an old man, so you don't want to roll through all that sordid past. But yeah, I was into beverage, and I happened to be in a really cool wine store called Crossroads Wines and Spirits, which was run by some really old school people. Who had all the minis and the quarter pints and did all that business off of 14th Street. And their son was really aware, way ahead of his time in his relationship with wine importers like Kermit Lynch and Terry Thees. And so we had amazing wine also in the store at the same time. And so I got a real crash course, and that like 9 o'clock in the morning, we'd be drinking amazing wines. Or rather, the guys who sold it were. I was mostly a stock boy, really. But got some real contact with that, got really excited about wines. And they also had spirits that people weren't really carrying widely in the city as well. So I left there, and then I managed another small spot called Manley's that's across from the Corner Bistro. And they had an amazing cellar, first full of Californian wine. So I got into all of that stuff, and then I was designing a wine list for a restaurant down the street that couldn't get a liquor license, and we'd run the bottles down to them. And that's how I started hanging out in restaurants and dabbled a little bit in serving and did a really bad job, and then went back to management. And I managed a restaurant in the West Village called Carib that was a restaurant that advertised every week in the Village Voice. And so it was a Caribbean restaurant owned by this neighborhood character called Bill Gottlieb, who owns about 20% of the West Village. He passed away, God rest his soul, but he was worth $2.5 billion, but he rolled around in a beat-up car and ripped-up shirt. And so I was managing there one night, and he never hired men. And, you know, I'll take a moment to pause on this, just thinking about it.
Please do.
Because I was talking, it is a hot topic because, you know, recently somebody in the business got in a lot of trouble, you know, saying something that was perceived as being, you know, critical of women or suggesting that women had no place within the craft industry. We all know that this has been a huge year for women bartenders within the cocktail world.
And, not just a year.
Well, this year particularly, but these last few years, you know. But it was funny that I was talking with another old timer like myself, and he's like, you know, I remember when you'd go on job calls and they weren't hiring men. You know,
totally.
They would only take women, and they'd have an open call, but it was clear that they only wanted female bartenders. And I'll say that over the years, including now, I have conversations with managers who say, we need to get a woman behind the bar. Never have I had a conversation where they say, I need a man behind the bar.
It's true.
So this industry actually has been skewed in their direction. We are fortunate for a small time in that the coctologist was seen as being a man, perhaps, but that's changed greatly. So, you know, I think, one, we as an industry deserve a lot of credit for advancing women faster than the cooking profession does, which is still an issue. But I also want to have a reality check to women who may feel that somehow they've been slighted, that in fact, historically, men have been the one prejudiced against. And to my own story, they never hired men in this restaurant. That was just the owner's policy. But the bartender didn't show up, and there was no choice. So I went back there. We had four blenders doing all kinds of blender drinks. We'd go through a case of rum every night at least. And I worked that night and made more money in that night than I did as a week as a manager. And I got to go home with all of the waitresses afterwards, which was, you know, I think Thomas Wall was the one who said it was like shooting fish in a barrel that was made out of fish, is what he said about Tinder. And so, you know, my motivations to become a bartender were not some lofty calling from God. It was things that motivate everyone around the world, and that is sex and money.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
Wow.
I'd like to tell my fans
Holy
out there
shit.
Who see me as some sort of guru that you know, I had some moment with God, but it was sex and money.
Wow.
Godly in its own way. Godly in its own way, sex and money. Okay, so now let's flash forward a bit. You're at Genuine Liquorette. You've got this program going that's got everybody super jazzed and excited. I love the idea that it's attractive to your guests because it's something that they can replicate. You know, I have a similar philosophy at my bar. We don't make anything in-house. Every item we use comes out of a bottle, meaning you don't have any sub-recipes, right? So I can, and my guests really sort of are attracted to the idea that they can buy the bitters at my bar, go buy the booze at the liquor store, and go right home and make the drink without having to make something first. So I see the appeal of that. What's obviously, I guess you do. Do you do the Bulldog at your bar?
We don't. We don't have a frozen margarita. So, you know, there are people who come and ask, do you have this in margarita form? But there's no can of margarita.
Right.
I could go to the work of putting all the ingredients into a can to do it, and I've thought about doing a juice box sort of thing, but the cost of goods...
They're out there. The RTD, like, ready-to-drink cocktails are out there, but they all suck.
They do, yeah. So, you know, of course, I'd have to have the fresh lime juice and everything, but I use an 8-ounce portion of soda wherever I can. Doing 8 ounces of the mix of the margarita and then throwing the tequila on top is going to give you a complete unbalanced idea. So I like the idea of somehow putting a frozen one in a vessel and then flipping an extra bottle of tequila on it. But no, we don't actually do Bulldogs. You know, I always reference that as being my inspiration for it. But it's insane. You know, at one point it was 65% of our overall business, and that's with all of the beers, wines, regular spirits, and food being sold down there.
What's the number one seller?
It's really insane. Number one seller is the Paloma, which is a 12-ounce portion. That's the only way I could find it. But it's the San Pellegrino Pompelmo, which, to my money, is the best grapefruit soda available right now. And then it's got Avion 50 mil tipped into it. And that's
is that the vernacular solid. Tipped in?
Yeah, well, it is actually a skill, because you got to flip it in there fast enough that the liquor stays in the bottle. Because what's cool about it is that the drink gets stronger as you drink it, rather than the ice melting and the last sip of your drink being the weakest and, you know, least satisfying. This, because of capillary action, the liquor slowly bubbles down into the drink, and by the end, it's actually at its strongest. So if you flip the bottle correctly, it's pretty fun and cool, as you've probably seen when you had a Bulldog, is that it bubbles down like a water cooler. And if you've got like a dark rum in a clear bottle like we have with the Zacapa, it's a great visual that just adds
capillary action.
Yes, sir.
I like that. That's a first for this show.
A lot of firsts.
So I'm trying to think of like how it might be. I don't think like most. I think a majority of liquor brands have like 50 ml bottles, the small bottles, but it must be difficult sometimes to find the right spirit in a 50 ml bottle. I mean, like, obviously,
is this limiting your selections?
One-offs, I can do a ton. And we have, you know, one of the cutest features is a mini back bar, which we made the little riser that lights up just like you'd have for a back bar, but it's all 50 mils. So one of your options there is just to take one of those 50 mils and tip it into any of our sodas and make your own. So we want to encourage people to have, and they do, they feel, oh, I created this then, so I can Instagram it and I own it. But it's tough when it's the ones that we're going through 6 cases a week, because they have to make it not only as a promotion for a new product, which a lot of companies do, but they need to be able to supply me regularly. So, for example, Cruzan, it wasn't possible for them to get me enough minis. The minis have to be available in an airplane or in a hotel, because they need to be producing enough of them that they're out there in the market. But, you know, once this happened, Lynette and the global people from Zacapa told me 50 mil sales sold all of a sudden all over the world with people doing this. And even when I did it, people were like, where the fuck are all these 50 milliliters going? Nobody sells 50 milliliters. And so it was definitely one of the things that stirred the scene from a brand perspective as well, and made a difference for them.
Two things I want to say about that is, like, first of all, I feel I'm really happy that you're comfortable with saying fuck on the radio, because Heritage Radio Network
is
totally
awesome.
Allows that. secondly, the amount of 50 ml bottles, like, just strictly from a bar management point of view.
Yeah.
I know it balances out, but, like, to me, you know, like, obviously the bigger the bottle, the lower the price is. Like,
the cost of goods is totally screwed up, and I can't talk on the radio. I can swear on the radio, but I can't talk about things that you guys know about that help me make that possible. And the people who don't know that or think about that are screwed, because, yes, going out of a liter bottle and having a soda gun is certainly a much better cost of goods for selling a rum and coke than the way that we're doing it. And we also, because we have the fast casual upstairs, our pricing is really low. So these things are $11.50 with tax. So rather than the $15 or $16 cocktails you'll see in cocktail bars, we wanted to keep them low. So you're also getting a whole can of soda in this serve.
Yeah, totally.
So from a management perspective, all of the tiny little sodas and all the tiny little bottles that I have to deal with are just a nightmare. Inventory for me, I mean, we also have 750 bottles on our wall, as well as all this mini stuff. So inventory and possible theft possibilities are just, you know, rampant. So I would not recommend it to, you know, other operators. I happen to make it work, and certainly the PR value and attention and the things that this is leading up to are worth it. But for the average person who says, I'm going to start doing this in my bar, they're going to discover pretty quickly that this is just really expensive.
You kind of like
balance
it out and justify it with like the amount of volume too. I mean, like that's one aspect. I'm the silver lining right here. I'm trying to justify like the happiness at the one of my favorite airplane bottle experiences was the very first time I went to San Francisco. I was asked to go out and to do guest bartending shift, one at Beretta and the other one at De La Rosa, which at the time Ren Fitzgerald was running, and that's where we became friends. But he took me for my very first time to the Buena Vista Cafe, the home of the Irish coffee.
Yeah.
And so we slammed some down there, and then we got some to go. And so the coolest thing was having the coffee and the cream and the sugar in a coffee cup, a paper to-go coffee cup, and then they just give you the Tullamore Dew whiskey in an airplane bottle. So it's like, all right, you know what? This is kind of legal. Go to the Golden Gate Park, mix it, and then you've never heard of
Enjoy
us.
Enjoy your day. You know? That's right.
Not legal at all, but the bar was probably filled with cops. It's the same with the places there where smoking is allowed still in those bars in that neighborhood, simply because those guys go way back and have cops drinking.
I mean, you can still go
there.
Over to the Turkey's Nest in Williamsburg and get a 32-ounce styrofoam cup of beer and walk right out into the park. They don't give a shit.
Well, speaking of cops, there's obviously, like, with such a unique program, such as Amore Amargo, having such a unique program, there are people like totally copping your style, you know. And I know that's
copping. Look at you.
Yeah, see what I'm doing here. Hey, man, we're almost 200 episodes deep. I figured something out. There's definitely an issue with brand identity getting repurposed for other places, but I think we should. And I know that you definitely have been experiencing a lot of that. It's inevitable that's going to happen. But I would really talk about that.
But I think it happens faster today, you know?
Yeah. Well, there's
social
so much
media,
information out there.
Boom, it's out there. You do something, someone else takes a photo, and poof, it's up there.
Well, if you'll allow me to pull my soapbox over here from the corner and get on that, you know, thank you.
You have a word or two on
the
ethics for us?
This station is a giant soapbox, man. You're already there.
And there may be some more of those F-bombs dropping as I speak about this. But,
fuck it,
you know,
man.
Like a week after this got picked up in Grub Street, you know, this guy came in from Auckland, New Zealand, and he said, I have a bar in Auckland, New Zealand, and I'm doing this, he said. But here's a picture. What I'm doing is with a Coke Zero, with a bourbon, with a Jack Daniel's stuck into it, and a piece of bacon on the can. And I said to him,
soup and salad.
I said, well, now you owe me twice, I said, for this idea and for bacon bourbon, because I invented that as well.
You worked with, you were working with Wiley Dufresne and Sam Mason for a while.
So Sam Mason.
Your familiarity with let's call it molecular mixology, and just like kind of like blending the kitchen into the bars. It's pretty
absolutely.
Deep and fast.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, the guy came in and that really doesn't bother me. And I'll say it doesn't bother me when I heard that 50 mil sales are selling all over the place. You know, I knew that people were going to see this and want to do it themselves at their bars. And I, you know, that's all in the spirit of things. And, you know, I went on and showed people how to do this at home. So I, like most people, believe that this is all in the public domain. And, you know, I want people to do this if they can. I think the thing that frustrates me, and the thing that I've spoke on before, I've given a seminar on this, A Tales of the Cocktail, is that there's a difference with you taking somebody's drink and doing in your bar, even if it's a matter of, you know, I'm just trying to look ways to drum up business and to sell more shit, and this is clever. I have no problem with people doing that. I do have a problem with people doing two things. One is if they are selling it outright, meaning that they're consultants who are working with a restaurant group and they decide to take this idea, you know, not even pretend that it's your idea, and they're selling it for cash. They're not behind the bar, like, you know, working hard to make a business. They're just outright selling
your idea.
And I have a problem with that. I also have a problem with, you know, people who are doing brand work with it. And it's happened to me in the past where somebody decides this is a great serve. I'm going to go on the road with this brand and I'm going to do this serve. And all those people that I meet and do this for are going to believe this was my idea. And again, they're simply getting paid for the idea. So I completely support and believe in the sharing of information. But I also did this seminar to warn young bartenders, and that I'm very fortunate because the press, I live in New York where all the press is, and the press pays attention to me. So when I did this, it was out there. I have precedent to be able to say this is something that I thought of before you. But for bartenders throughout this country,
no way braggy. It's just like, dude, credit where credit's due.
And there very well may have been people who did the same idea before me, but they didn't have the platform that I did either. So, you know, saying this, I may get angry emails of people like, well, here's a photo of I did the same idea 6 months before. So I know and appreciate that the fact that I have the media platform helps me establish it. It's my idea. And that's why I want to warn young bartenders, you know, who may not have the access to the press, is that these people who are working for events and brands and stuff like that can come to your bar, see your idea, and because they have a wider platform than you, totally get credit for it and be seen as the people who came up with the idea. And, you know, it's unfortunate that our industry has come to that, but there's so much money at stake now, and there are all sorts of journeyman characters who've gotten into the cocktail scene who really don't have any pedigree, didn't really work in bars. They can reference, you know, I literally had somebody like try and get a job saying they worked at Death and Company, but they'd worked the door, you know? And it's like, you can just reference some sort of experience you have, and through social media and brand relations, you can actually build a career in this industry. And, you know, for old timers like us, I can't help but think that's kind of fucked up. There's one F-bomb right there.
No, there'll be plenty more.
Keep them fucking coming.
Yeah. I mean, it is a problem, obviously. It has been, I mean, with bartenders and chefs, you know, coming up with ideas that get co-opted. And we are very fortunate, as you said, you know, being here in New York City, in Brooklyn, and we do have a lot. There's a higher level of media attention for us.
Absolutely.
So a lot of times,
yeah, the light is always shining on us.
Yeah, and there's,
thank God.
There's, yeah, absolutely. There's a lot more ability to have your recipes and ideas time stamped.
Yeah.
In the media, yep. Like in true media, like, than there is in most other places.
Absolutely.
But
establishing provenance is kind of easy here.
Yeah, it's like you're copywriting that idea at that moment, and you have proof, and it's like, all right, I did this.
Yeah, so you got to call people out, and that's what I'd like to encourage people to do. That's really our only recourse. We don't have legal means. There's no intellectual property protection really in our industry. So I encourage bartenders everywhere to be careful about what you submit to a recipe contest, because that then belongs to them. Remember that when you're working in a restaurant, you develop ideas. That belongs to the restaurant. You know, you need to be smarter and more informed about it, because yes, today you Instagram one thing of your drink and it's copied. And, you know, I'm really frustrated by people who are too lazy to take that idea and at least improve upon it. I just showed you guys a picture of someone who improved upon the idea, or just at least made the effort of making it different. He took a bottle and actually like laser cut it and did the same idea. At least, you know, try and improve or contribute to the conversation. You don't just steal exactly somebody's name, idea, presentation, you know, and be lazy.
Absolutely.
About it.
Well, one of the things that is most important for me, and I think for all of us, like something I found when I started bartending and join this community that we love so much is that there is respect. Like, I give respect, and I like to get respect back. And it's, you have to be completely respectful of people's, sometimes, lack of, or technical, like, equipment usage, you know, like, yeah. You're like, oh, you're doing some really amazing shit with just the shittiest ice, you know? And then also, at the same time, I'm like, go Dutch Kills, and they've got their own, like, ice factory. Yeah. Like, I respect that, too. You know, I guess what I'm saying is...
There's an arms race out here, you know, and that's a whole other subject.
But you have to have respect.
That I think is screwed up in this industry is there's bars that have people making customized shit for them. And if you see, like, the competitions now, you know, all these world best competitions, people have these elaborate, custom-made or antique setups that they serve their drinks in. And it is becoming a thing where in order to be considered the best bar, you have to spend tons of money on your ice, on your interiors,
on your glassware setups and stuff like that.
And lots of talented, really interesting people in drinks don't get the respect they deserve just because other people have the money and the means to do shit that you can't, like you're talking about. I can't spend $1 on each ice cube. I don't know how other people do, but, you know, that's what's happening out there now.
Yeah, I think there's also something to be said about, you know, I'm just going to say what we're all thinking. Thomas Waugh. Bring him up for the second time in the show today. Just so we all know and we're all on the same page.
The fucking pineapple.
Thomas Waugh started the fucking Brass Pineapple. And now they're everywhere. Let's just respect that. Now they're connected
to a big brand that can afford to manufacture them rather than buy them off of eBay. And it was not his means to do what those companies were.
Right. Totally co-opting his idea. I don't know. Is he part of that? No.
But also, there's, you know, I was in a bar the other day and I was like, all right, you know what? I want like some sort of Scotch sour kind of thing. And I'm not saying names or a place or anything, but this kid made me a penicillin cocktail.
Yeah.
Didn't call it a penicillin cocktail.
Yeah.
But it was by spec a penicillin cocktail. And I just had to. I was like, yeah, I love the penicillin cocktail. He's like, no, I'll call it this. I'm not even going to tell you what he was calling it because it was a stupid name. But he was like, he totally tried to own that idea. And granted, the reason why the penicillin cocktail is such a worldwide phenomenon is because it is a true modern classic.
Yeah.
These are all ingredients. It's two different scotches, lemon, honey, and ginger. I mean, it could have been made 150 years ago.
Absolutely.
In any bar. But the thing is, this nameless piece of shit, fucktard, was...
Well, I don't know how you guys feel, but when somebody comes in and orders that drink from me, I feel a little self-conscious about it. And I'll usually make a comment like, well, it's not going to be as good as it is at Attaboy, you know. And I'll even say, this is Sammy's drink. I don't juice ginger. I have a ginger syrup, so I'll make it for you. Yeah. But I always, even in that, which is a drink that is, you know, been co-opted by everybody, I feel somewhat weird about making it in my bar somehow. I don't know if you guys feel that
same way. Yeah, I mean, like, and at the end of it, I was like, dude, you know this is the penicillin cocktail. And he was like, whoa. And you could tell that he knew. He was just trying to like own it.
But I mean, is he in that same situation that Evan was just talking about? Is he just a young bartender who's kind of ill-aware?
No, he was absolutely aware.
Okay.
He was just trying to like...
I'm trying to give him the benefit of the doubt.
Trying to steal that.
Fuck that guy.
No. And I was like, you do realize that this drink is...
Was it me?
Popular world. No, you don't have juices at your bar.
Listen, I do a lot of things when I drink.
I know.
I cannot be held responsible at all times.
Yeah, I remember last night, kind of. And I was like, dude, you do realize that... You ever heard of Brooklyn Brewery? Which is also a worldwide...
Phenomenon.
Known phenomenon.
Juggernaut of beer deliciousness.
I was like, so... They actually based one of their beers on this fucking cocktail, dude. Like, you're not getting away with shit. Like, you have to realize that. I don't know, like, what part of, like, the bar community you think you're in, man, but yeah. This is like, we all know each other. Yeah. And actually, like, customers also are well equipped with the information, which, again, is something that we all agree on should be out there.
I love the educated guest. Yeah. The guest that I don't love is the you know, what's the old saying?
The vodka not too sweet.
A little information is a dangerous thing. Yeah. That's the guest that catches me. But then that's a teaching opportunity. So I love that guest too, I guess. I love them all.
I feel like we've just been bitching for 30 minutes. But
our first bitch session.
But, okay, so let's get back on track here. Genuine Liquorette, doing awesome stuff.
Yeah.
Evan, you're a fucking awesome bartender. I love you.
Thank you, sir.
It's always good hanging around you when I get a chance to.
Yeah.
Man, we're at the end of the show.
Wow, that was fast.
It goes by fast.
Could put a quick plug tonight, if anybody's out there, we're doing a Jim Beam event. We're going to have little upside-down drinks with all of their products from 7 to 10. Got a DJ.
And Adam Harris
I'm
is
behind
be
the
there.
Bar, and Adam Harris, and I think Phil Amazing. Pepperdine as well are going to be down there. Yeah. So please come on by and get a free upside-down drink if you haven't had one yet.
Drink upside-down drinks and then get upside down.
Yeah.
Let's get twisted.
Awesome. Check out Genuine Liquorette. Check out Evan Freeman. He's one of the best in the biz. And check out Heritage Radio Network for many other programs like this one. Until next week, I'm Damon Bolte.
And I'm Souther Teague.
And this has been The Speakeasy. Cheers, guys.
Hey, what's up? This is Jack Inslee, the executive producer of Heritage Radio Network, also the host of Full Service Radio, and I want to talk to you about brandy. I was lucky enough to visit Louisville, and we all know Kentucky is whiskey territory. However, the best thing I had to drink was brandy. I got to visit Copper and King's Distillery, and they make pure copper pot distilled American brandy aged in Kentucky bourbon barrels, matured with rock and roll. That's right. Sonic aging. They're playing music to the barrels. The stuff is double distilled, non-chill filtered, unadulterated by bois, sugar, or caramel color. And this stuff is feisty, rambunctious, with a long, smooth finish. The stuff isn't made exactly in the style of an international brandy or a cognac. It's more along the lines of an American whiskey. I can really be honest here and tell you, I'm not just reading you an ad, I'm giving you a tip. American brandy, you're not seeing it everywhere. Copper and Kings is doing it incredibly well, and they're cool people. The distillery is full of incredible art. Like I said, they're playing rock and roll to the barrels. So again, Copper and Kings, pure copper, pot distilled American brandy, aged in Kentucky bourbon barrels. That's copperandkings.com. Drink it neat, put it in a cocktail, sub it for your brown spirits, experiment, have fun, get funky. This stuff is awesome.